explain the bill as well.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. Today is February 23rd. I am opening a work session on the possible introduction of committee measures.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, just before the committee hearing time, about 20 minutes or so ago, we posted Legislative Concept 2131. I also sent out a more detailed explanation to each of your offices. If you have any questions after the meeting, please get in contact with me. LC 2131 establishes, it does three primary things. It establishes a new Department of Information Technology, transferring the office of the state CIO and the enterprise IT and supporting functions from the Department of Administrative Services to the newly formed agency. That said, the measure does retain the Department of Administrative Services internal IT organization, which is very much in line with the approach other agencies take for internal information technology needs.
And before you go further, I'd like you to stop there for just a moment, because some people listening, or anyone on the committee who wasn't here in the last session, may not realize the context. This isn't like starting something brand new. This something has already set this in motion by some actions in previous sessions.
Absolutely.
Could you explain the context of this?
Will do. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, in the 2015 legislative session, the House Bill 3099 was passed. That bill did a variety of things, including clarifying that the state chief information officer is an appointee of the governor and receives direction from the governor, that the state CIO is responsible for enterprise information technology services, including the state data center, and it clarified the state CIO's authority to oversee information technology projects, operations within the executive branch of state government, and also gave some modicum of additional authority to the state CIO in regard to procurement oversight.
Okay.
Does that
Thank
give
you
an overview?
Yeah, that's okay. A good summary.
So with that said, again, this legislative concept establishes the new department. It then intends to transfer the state information technology procurement functions and authority from the Department of Administrative Services and the DAS director to the new Department of Information Technology and the state CIO. This particular action is not new across the nation. We asked the state chief information officer and the Department of Administrative Services to do a nationwide study on how information technology is organized across the nation. At this point in time, there are 21 states that place the state information technology procurement authority with the central procurement officer in a DAS-like organization. But there are conversely 11 states that place that authority and the resources to conduct state IT procurements and price agreements with the state CIO. That said, there's no reason to believe that this model can't also be implemented effectively in the state of Oregon. The third and final kind of core purpose of LC 2131 is to do some statutory cleanup. In the 2015 session, when House Bill 3099 was originally drafted, the drafter from Legislative Council had to touch over 40 Oregon revised statutes. Essentially, the authority for state information technology is so dispersed, not only in operation throughout the agencies, but also is dispersed across a whole variety of Oregon revised statutes. And so this last piece is really a statutory cleanup. It envisions creating a singular information technology chapter within the Oregon revised statutes and Oregon laws to provide better awareness, transparency, and clarity on roles and responsibilities for state IT. So those are the three primary things that Legislative Concept 2131 intends to do.
It's, and what it intends to do, by creating the department and transferring some duties, it still doesn't do everything it could have done that some other states are doing. Is that correct? Other states have been even more approached it in a broader way to really put all the IT functions in one place. This doesn't do that. Is that correct?
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, no, it does not. You are correct. A number of states, a growing number of states, have fully consolidated and unified all of the information technology personnel within a particular state, certainly in the executive branch of those states, within a singular information technology agency. There are a variety of kind of placements of those agencies, whether they're standalone or within Department of Administrative Services like organization, but certainly it's a growing number of states that have done that. Comes to mind three or four most recently, certainly the state of Florida, the state of Iowa. There is a consolidation effort in the state of Washington, and many more. Michigan is probably the one that kind of started the ball rolling across the country in about 1998. So there's a whole variety of states that have done that.
But we're not taking that step.
We are
time.
Not.
Okay. That's
originally in September of 2016, the committee members that were here at the time may recall the original discussion did contemplate the creation of a legislative concept that would do the three things I mentioned and fully consolidate all the staff, the nearly 1,900 staff across all 47 agencies, into the new department. That said, this is a compromise legislative concept that falls short of that.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move that LC 2131 be introduced as a JLCIMT Senate bill.
The motion has been made is to make this a committee bill for the Senate, a Senate bill by this committee. Is there discussion about that motion? Senator Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just that, you know, voting to make this a committee bill doesn't indicate any member's intent to vote for or against this in future, simply to make it available for discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
I apologize for arriving late. I got tied up in my office. And would anyone care to provide a little more clarification for me, since I'm I realize it's a new department within DAS, and just give me a quick thumb show.
Sure. Certainly. Chair Nathanson, Senator Linthicum. Actually, this legislative concept envisions essentially splitting the Department of Administrative Services. Currently, in the 2015 legislative session, House Bill 3099 did provide autonomy for the state CIO, did clarify that the state CIO was a governor's appointee with independent authority. However, the legislation stopped short of creating a new information technology agency that would be a standalone agency. This legislative concept into the 2017 session would in fact accomplish that. It would eliminate the situation we have today where the Department of Administrative Services director, who is a governor's appointee, and the state CIO, who is a governor's appointee, are both in the same agency and not accountable to one another.
Right.
And so that would be the first item. The second is the transfer of state information technology procurement authority, which currently resides predominantly, not wholly, because of the actions we took in 2015, but predominantly with the DAS director and the Department of Administrative Services. It would move that procurement authority to the new agency under the supervision of the state CIO.
Thank you. And that's probably a discussion worth having.
Yes.
Good. Other discussion? I think Senator Riley, I'll ask for your concurrence based on your wisdom in previous committees. Often in joint ways and means, we simply ask if there are objections rather than taking a roll call vote. I'd like to use that process, if that's all right.
Sure, and I do that in many, we do that in many committees, so that's not just in joint committees, but yes.
Seeing no other discussion, are there objections? No objections, motion passes.
Great.
So I can close the work session now.
That's right.
There's no other business on this bill. I'm closing the work session, and I'm opening the informational meeting now. Now, this is probably what the rest of you are here for.
Sure. Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, we have a good program scheduled for the committee this afternoon. We have three primary presentations. First up will be the Secretary of State. They'll be giving an information technology overview. This is, again, in alignment with kind of the overall theme for this first part of phase one of the process. We first heard from the State Chief Information Officer. We've begun to hear from some of his staff. We're now hearing from some of the entities that have independent authority currently, Secretary of State, the Oregon State Treasurer, and then I believe next week we'll have the Legislative Administration and Judicial Department. So for today, we have Secretary of State up first, Oregon State Treasury second, and then we'll have one of the Office of the State CIO Strategic Technology Officers give us another presentation on, for this session, the public safety program area. So if the folks from Secretary of State could come up, and if you could please introduce yourself for the record before you start speaking. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Chris Mullen. I'm the IT director with the Secretary of State. Glad to be here this afternoon to talk a little bit about our organization and the things that we do for our citizens.
And I'm Jeff Morgan. I'm the director of the Business Services Division, and I'm here to help Chris get through the presentation. I'm his clicker. Let's go to
the next slide. Okay. The click assistant?
He might have to fire the clicker.
We're kicking each other under the
bus.
I recommend that you use the up and down arrow on the
That's
on
what
the
I'm
keyboard.
Doing. Thank you, Sean.
So the work that we do within the agency, we are the chief elections officer, auditor of public funds. We're the first stop for Oregon businesses, and we are the keeper of archived shared history. The vision of our agency is with a servant's heart, applying experience, knowledge, and leadership to help improve accountability, transparency, and integrity to Oregon government. Our ISD version, our division vision, is to support those that vision and the agency in meeting its stakeholders' expectations and business goals by delivering innovative, secure, effective, and dependable information services. The first part of this briefing, we're going to talk about kind of the way our organization is laid out, and that's going to include network diagrams and stuff. But the first one is the organizational chart. The key takeaways here, under the Chief Information Officer, which is the IT director, we have two other middle managers, the Technical Services Manager, and he oversees the database administration, network administration, server administration, and then the Application Development Manager, which oversees the 8 or 9 large applications that are providing services for our public citizens. The other three, web services, testing, and security, are direct line to the CIO, mostly for conflict of interest purposes. The security team needs to work for the CIO versus working for applications or infrastructure because they provide security oversight of those two teams. Same with testing. We want to make sure that our testing is it's somewhat independent, and the web services, because they're providing services across the team, that they would direct line to the CIO as well. These are some of the applications that we're providing. These are the large scale applications that Oregon citizens are logging into and using. And kind of the key takeaway here is that ISD doesn't sit in a closet somewhere in a dark room somewhere, that we're actually providing support across the agency, in many cases physically sitting with the customer so that they can get a better understanding of the business practices and the business needs for those applications. The next slide is more of a reference for you. If you go back to the other one, you see a lot of acronyms. This spells out those acronyms, what the acronyms stand for, and the functions of each of those applications. And I won't bore you by going through all of them, but for your reference, you guys, we'll have a copy of those. Governance gets talked a lot about, and I'm sure you're hearing a lot about it from all the other agencies as well. And we take a couple of different approaches to governance. The first is, how do we define risk and issues, and how do we gather requirements? And those are the two kind of key things with a lot of our large scale projects. If there's problems with the projects, we need to be able to report that. If there are requirements, we want to make sure that the applications are serving the citizens appropriately and the things they need. So we have development teams, as I said, that are physically sitting with the customer, that work with the application administrator. Then the application administrator works for the division director, and then there's the steering group, which oversees all of that. And so as issues or risks come up during a project, that gets reported down through the application administrator, division director, to the steering group, and vice versa. As requirements are gathered, we're getting that from the top down. The next chart kind of breaks out how we do our project prioritization, because each of the divisions are really, really different from one another. Elections does its thing, corporations does its thing, and each of those division directors have their top five projects that they're working on. But how do we as an agency define what's important to the agency? So on a quarterly basis, the leadership team, which is the directors and the executive management, would meet to talk about each of the five, top five for those divisions. And then those are set at the top level, what the top five for the agency are. The project priorities are set between the division director and the CIOs. And then the task delegation and prioritization within each project, and those priorities are handled between the application administrator and project manager. Does that make sense? Questions? So our network connectivity, all of our traffic does come in through DAS, through the managed WAN. We have three entities within our agency, three physical separate locations: the Public Services Building, which is where the divisions themselves sit and reside, as well as IT, with the exception of Archives, they're over in their building, and then we have our executive team actually in the Capitol Building. So we have three separate instances there. The other key takeaway here is OCVR, because of the critical data that has, does have redundancy. The primary site is here at the Capitol Mall building. The redundant site is out in Baker City, and it's hosted out there. So, and both are hot site systems, so we keep those physically separated. Talking specifically about the infrastructure team, we take an ITIL approach. Information technology infrastructure library is, it's a kind of an old term, it's been around, but it's really a set of practices for how you do service management within your organization. And the way we take a three-tiered approach, that all calls would come into the help desk, where we provide end user support for about 190 people in the agency. We only support, from the help desk or the service desk perspective, we only support the internal agency people. People that are having problems with their applications will actually call elections, or they'll call the corporations to talk to them before it gets to us. And again, so we're trying to filter those calls out. If we can't answer it at tier one, the phone call itself, then it gets escalated to tier two, where it goes to a network administrator, a server administrator. And then tier three is database administration, or there's actually a need to change, a functional change to an application. So that's how we do workflow management within the organization. Okay. IT security. This biennium, we added two analysts to the team. We have somebody that's doing security analysis for our applications, somebody doing security analysis for the infrastructure, and then we have a policy, kind of a senior policy person who keeps our policies and procedures updated. We've spent a lot of time this year working on administrative controls, updating our existing security plans, policies, our incident checklists, and we do that in collaboration with the state CIO and ESO office. We most of the time get our templates from them, but as we're making updates to those, we will vet those with those organizations as well. Brought in some new firewalls, doing some in-depth application monitoring, as well as added URL filtering and additional whitelisting and blacklisting. We've really spent a lot of time trying to ratchet that down to where our applications are available to the right people. And that can be challenging when you have Oregonians across the globe and sometimes in places where maybe they're not the most trusted countries, and having to open up some of those ports. And so we've had to establish risk acceptance forms and a process around how do we know that it's okay to open up an IP address for people to get into our applications. And that can be a very complex conversation. One of the big things that we did this year was the implementation of a tool called Splunk. And what Splunk does, it's a funny name, it allows you to pull logs from across your infrastructure and look for anomalies. So, and the individual that we have doing this, he's literally glued to his monitor for 8 or 9 hours a day, and he's just analyzing data as it's coming across. He can create graphs, reports, alerts, charts that if there's something that seems anomalous, that will get his attention, and then we can be more proactive to any kind of issue. So, and we did meet with a couple of the different groups across the state, the Information Security Council and the risk group. Our guy actually met with them to share kind of how we're using that tool because we want to, you know, we want to collaborate with the community. We did some work to mature our RiskSense and Acunetics tools. RiskSense is our infrastructure monitoring. Acunetics is how we do our internal penetration tests against our applications. Because it's important that you can do some of that internal stuff without having to go and bring in an independent. And I think an interesting conversation that's happening within our agency is, when do you do an independent assessment against an application before it goes into production? And when do you bring in an independent to do that? Because there's costs associated, right? And I think the answer to that is depending on the size of the functionality change that you're putting out there. If it's small change, the way that you do addresses, maybe we can do independent internal penetration testing versus bringing in the big guns who are going to charge you $10,000 to do it. Also, and this one's actually kind of fun to do, is we're going to start ratcheting up our phishing. That seems to be a kind of a cross-the-board private sector, public sector issue. Are these phishing emails that people are getting? Click on here. You got a FedEx package that's waiting for you. We want to find a tool, and we talked to Treasury. I guess they've got one that we're going to be looking at that allows you to do internal phishing testing against your agency. You don't get to tell them, and you get to see how many people will actually click on those links. We also want to get a better, more robust security awareness training, because as you know, and I'm sure you've heard in many of these, that your weakest link is, you know, is a problem for across the agencies. And so we want people to always have that awareness, especially with things like phishing, that you never know. If you don't know who that email address is, it's better to check. Take 5 minutes and ask the help desk. So we'll be ratcheting that up. Switching to budget.
Yes, Representative Newman.
So,
thanks
for your presentation so far. I just wanted to ask about going back to information security there. So you said you have a single agency security officer who's a dotted line report to DAS. How's that working out for you then?
No, they're actually they're direct report to me, the CIO.
Oh, I see. So, and maybe you have special treatment because you're the Secretary of State's office and you're not an executive branch agency. But so you don't have your agency security officers are not reporting to the state CIO's office then?
Representative Nierman, members of committee, that is correct. They report to me.
Good. Thank you.
Yes. Moving on.
Sorry. Yes, sir.
Just an easy question before you move on. When you have a product like Splunk and there's enterprise versions of that, there's localized versions, is this also used in the state, data center environment, or is it something unique to your office?
Senator Linthicum, members of the committee, that's a great question because that's something that I think all agencies should focus on, and it's certainly something that we do take very seriously. Whenever we want to go out and find something, the first place we stop is with our procurement team and say, does anybody have a tool like this? Because we don't want to have to go out and reinvent the wheel. We don't want to, and so we need avenues that we can go see what other agencies have and what other agencies may be using. If there's already a price agreement on something that we can participate in, for example, it saves time than having to go out and try to find something new. So with this particular thing, we were one of the only agencies using it. We went out and found it. But like I said, we have shared it, and I think that there are other agencies who are very interested in bringing that in-house as well.
Thank you.
I would like our committee staff to explain something, since there was a question about who's reporting to whom and how that works.
Sure. Yeah, Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Representative Nierman, you asked the question about reporting relationships. The governor's executive order 1613 focused on the executive branch, and it did explicitly exempt the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, and the Attorney General, in part because there is currently a separate security statute that does the same. That said, in the 16 session, there was a Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology bill, Senate Bill 1538, that recognized that separation and does require essentially all branches, including the constitutional offices, to report to the Legislative Fiscal Office anytime there is an information security incident or when the agency might complete an information security assessment of some kind. And certainly I have met with Mr. Mullen at least on one occasion, and they've been forthcoming with the required information so far.
So the idea is information is shared, but there's no mandated coordination or organizational reporting.
Co-Chair Nathanson, specific answer to your question about supervisory relationships, there is no hardline connection from the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, or the other branches of government to the state CIO. Mm-hmm. There is within the statute I referenced that explicitly exempts the Secretary of State, the Treasurer, and the Attorney General from the state CIO's authority. There is a requirement for coordination, however. There is a requirement that the plans, policies, and procedures and standards that those entities create align with the state CIO, those that are developed for the executive branch by the state CIO and his staff. But there is no hardline supervisory responsibility or relationship.
That helps clarify. Thank you.
Okay. In looking at budget overview, we have in the left-hand column our total ISD budget broken out by general fund and other funds. Last biennium's or this current biennium's packages 100 and 102. And then in the underneath that, package 101 through package 116 are for the 2017-2019 biennium. And we're going to talk about each of these packages real briefly. And then I would also mention that Secretary Richardson is working closely with the LFO and looking at these packages, and there is a potential add for additional security enhancements package that he's considering. So subject to change on some of this stuff. Any questions? Okay, this next slide, again, going over how we're a cross-divisional support element. In the dark purple Those are the numbers of FTEs in each of our business units. The numbers on top of those are the number of ISD people who are supporting those particular divisions by biennium. So elections, they have a 0.5 increase in FTE. We're adding an additional person and I'll actually talk about these additions on the next slide, what they actually are. But we're adding one additional to elections, one additional to corporations. And there's two other positions that were approved for limited duration last biennium, and we're looking to make those permanent. So we'll talk about those on the next slide if there's no questions on this. So the position that we're asking for in corporations is a lead systems analyst. They would be providing additional security remediation. The security teams, they look for compliance, they look for best practices, but it's the infrastructure people, it's the lead systems analysts that are assigned to the teams that actually do the heavy lifting for the work within the applications or on the network that needs to be fixed or to be brought into compliance. So we're looking for an additional person for corporations to be able to focus on that, as well as help with requirements gathering and technical leadership for the development team. The corporations has five pretty large applications, and right now they just have one lead systems analyst, so we're trying to spread that work out a little bit. Under elections, right now they have a lead systems analyst and no actual project manager overseeing Aura Star and OCVR and election night reporting. So we're asking to bring in somebody that can provide that oversight for cost, schedule, and scope, project planning, analysis, and monitoring vendor relationships, which is really important as we look at OCVR and the future of OCVR, the Central Voter Registry. The two limited durations that were approved are both in elections as well, and one of them was to help with the development of OMV. The other one was to augment. We actually had only one developer assigned to the elections team that was overseeing those multiple applications, so we wanted to help them out a little bit. There was one other thing. I can't think of it, but any questions on those positions? Okay. Package 102 is our staff true-ups package. We're looking at $19,000 out of other funds. We're looking at adding, we had an information system specialist 7 that we're moving to an 8, and the increase was to cover some additional responsibilities around technical leadership and day-to-day assigning, priority, and reviewing development teamwork. A web content coordinator from a ISS 4 to a public affairs specialist 2, and the position was reclassified to be more in line with agencies' needs to focus on the web interface and functionality of applications for our public-facing applications. And then a web usability tester from an ISS 4 to an ISS 6. The position was reclassified to capture added responsibilities for providing senior-level experience and knowledge of technical testing and requirements. So increase in responsibilities for those three individuals. Package 103 covers the Oregon Buys or e-procurement project. We're looking at $250,000 in other funds, and that's kind of an estimated high end estimate. Our agency is currently using ORPIN for contract opportunity notification. This new solution would provide end-to-end e-procurement solution. Have you guys been briefed on this already on Oregon Buys? I don't want to have to.
Yeah.
I don't want to bore you guys with some of the details if you already are aware.
Co-Chair Nathanson, Co-Chair Riley, we have received a high-level briefing, likely from the Department of Forestry, in the last legislative session or during the interim.
Okay.
But not yet.
Not this session.
Not yet this session.
Well, we're looking at it in-house specifically for the Secretary of State. And the big thing for us is the robust contract management side of it, where we can do in-system approvals, and it ties goods and services to the payment. That continues to be a challenge, I think, is as invoices come in, trying to figure out what it was, which work they were doing and for what, especially if you have a vendor that's providing multiple levels of support on one project. You want to make sure that it's coming out of the right bucket of money. So, and the standardized ad hoc reporting.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
So $250,000 on that POP 103 there. It occurs to me that possibly you could just get in on using Basecamp with the state CIO's office. Have you considered that as an alternative?
So I am not the project manager for that, Representative Nierman, members of the committee. I can certainly get back to you on that. I'm not sure the genesis or how the decision was made to go with e-procurement. I can get back to you on that, sir.
Thank you.
Okay.
And Mr. McSpadden, you'll make sure that the full committee gets a copy of the response.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Chair Nathanson. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, Representative Nierman, I can tell you that it's likely the response will come back that the vendor management program known as Basecamp is more of a procedure or process. It is a program where individuals are managing the relationships with the key vendors that the state of Oregon works with. It is not an automated system. And so what they're talking about here is actually purchasing the ability to access a software as a service solution. I believe that's the current direction of this project. But certainly,
so Basecamp's not really an appropriate
it's
tool
not,
for that.
Yeah, not really a tool. It's more of a program. But certainly the agency, it would be great if the agency could work with the Office of the State CIO. Certainly, I know you're already in contact with them and provide a response back to the committee, and I'll make sure that all the members see that.
That's fine. That's probably good enough for response, just what you just gave me there. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Package 104. This is the Oristar OCVR integration. We have two main election systems that were built separately from one another, and there's a lot of data that traverses or that needs to be sent in both directions. And the way that it is currently is that it has to be done manually, which creates a problem for duplicate manual entries or additional work. The integration would provide automated feeds, saving business time at both the county level and at the state level, and more accurate, consistent elections data. Any questions on that? Package 116, election night reporting. This is for $83,000 out of general funds. This is a solution that we brought in for the general election last year. Was well received. We had an opportunity to demonstrate it for the LFO. Provides easy-to-use graphics, maps, precinct-level races, and the ability for users to specifically track any particular contest that they wanted to do. This particular package adds two years of funding for ongoing maintenance and support. All right, and then last, we're going to talk about the just a list of the current projects that we're completing and wrapping up this biennium and what we're looking at doing for 17-19. As you know, some of our strategic projects that we completed were the Oregon Motor Voter Election Night Reporting, Berry Modernization, which we expect to wrap up by the end of this biennium. Our voters' pamphlets went out, on-site electronic deposit, and under the UCC application, revenue warrants and county warrants. Some of our in-house operational projects was the Splunk tool that we talked about, the firewall upgrades, the 2013 Microsoft rollout. Our plan this biennium is to migrate our email from an outsourced vendor to ETS and to complete the Windows 10 and PC refresh, and then lots of security administrative controls that we're focusing on. Ongoing with that. For 17-19, besides the some of the packages, the integration that we talked about in Oregon buys, the statement of organization with elections, as well as initiatives, referendums, and referrals, we're looking at updating our front-end web portal to 2.0, and the implementation of disaster recovery. That's something that our agency really needs to do a hard look at. And getting some policy around that. And then operationally, we are going to upgrade our intranet our one-stop shop for kind of forms and policies within the agency. Additional security enhancements to both applications and infrastructure, moving from a proactive or moving to proactive from reactive state. Web browser compatibility of applications. It seems like every week a new web browser comes out. We want to make sure our applications work for those, whether it's Safari, Chrome, Internet Explorer. We need to beef up our mobile device management. Right now, we just don't allow BYOD. We just don't let people bring their devices into work and plug into our network. But we are open to possibly doing that in the future. I'm with you, right? No. I digress.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, if I may, there was a study done where a corporation dropped some little plug-in devices in the driveway, and employees picked them up and brought them in and plugged them in to see what they were. It's just not a good plan.
Yeah. Yes. We are looking at
plug it in, and it says April Fool. Mm-hmm.
You have to pass the phishing test first on the emails before you get the.
It called the security desk.
Yeah, that's right.
But even for the state-owned iPads and cell phones, to be able to provide device management for that is definitely the right thing to do, and so we need to beef that up a little bit. There's a trim upgrade, and then something near and dear to my heart is getting away from Novell and moving to Active Directory. So those are our 17, 19 big projects. And that is the end of my presentation, unless there are any questions.
Yes, Senator Ryan.
So just a comment. Because of Representative Nierman's question earlier, he referred to the Secretary of State and Treasurer as not being part of the executive, but they are constitutionally in the administrative department, and Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution makes it clear that they are part of the executive. So.
Just a curiosity, if I may, how many NetWare servers do you have hanging around? I mean, you know how many years it's been?
Senator Linthicum, members of the committee. I'm sorry, how many what again?
How many Novell NetWare servers do you have sitting out there on the wire?
It's eDirectory, and it's one.
Okay,
so
just a single eDirectory left over.
Yes, sir. So going away from that.
Thanks. I was going to be amazed if you had a.
I think that's all for this part of our information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Nathanson, members of the committee, next up we have the Oregon State Treasury, and they'll be switching presentations here in just a moment.
That was really slick clicking.
That's right. Or if you could remember to please introduce yourself for the record,
yes.
That'd be great.
For the record, my name is Cora Parker. I'm the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasurer's Office.
And for the record, I'm Nancy O'Halloran. I'm the CIO, or the IT Director, for the Oregon State Treasury.
You can click to the agenda.
So I'll begin today with a very brief overview and then Nancy will give you a more detailed look at our Information Technology Division. We'll both talk about some strategic initiatives, Nancy particularly about cybersecurity and some of the efforts we're doing there. And then I'll talk to you about our cash management improvement and renewal program for any of you who were on the committee last year was something we talked to you about then as well. And then we'll make ourselves available to answer any questions. So here you have a high-level organizational chart for the Treasurer's Office. Notably, Treasury supports investments, debt management, cash management, banking, public funds protection, the 529 Savings Network, which includes college savings and the new ABLE Savings Program, and the new Oregon Retirement Savings Board that was, again, just created last session. Those are the items you see in blue, light blue. The dark blue are those shared services or executive services area, including information technology that really support those core functional areas of the agency. The next slide here just shows you our vision and mission statement and a couple of stats that I think are important to understand the work that we do. We have $90 billion of assets under investment management. As you might imagine, the bulk of those are in PERS trust funds. But there's another approximately $15 to $16 million in the Oregon Short-Term Fund, as well as some sizable amounts in the Common School Funds, SAFE Funds, and a number of other agency-specific funds. We also have about $230 billion in banking-related transactions that come through the agency on an annual basis. And then our debt program manages approximately $10 billion in state-related debt. All right, I'll let Nancy talk to us about information technology.
Good afternoon. Oops. First of all, my apologies for any annoying coughing during this. I'm my first day back from a bout with pneumonia, so my apologies in advance. The IT Technology Division provides IT services to all Treasury divisions as well as to other state agencies and local governments. We provide basic infrastructure, security, and service desk to all Treasury staff. We also provide specialized systems for business units and Treasury customers as well as consulting services to ensure effective use of information technology across the agency. This slide shows some of the major systems or services currently used to support Treasury operations. Many of these are managed directly by IT, though a growing number are hosted and managed by financial service providers and other third-party services. As you can see from the list of applications, the majority of our internal application services are devoted to cash management. Thank you. Going back and forth between jobs. So our IT governance structure emphasizes partnership and collaboration at every level, from strategic through daily operations and project management. Our technology direction is developed based on business initiatives, policy requirements, and priorities outlined by the strategic leadership team. All major projects are approved by the strategic leadership team. Smaller projects may be approved with agreement between individual division directors and myself. Day-to-day operational concerns and tasks are handled at the manager level. Operational concerns are a common source of project recommendations, but require director and CIO approval to move forward. All chartered projects have a project manager assigned. Larger projects have a dedicated project manager, while smaller projects may be managed by qualified business or technical staff with oversight from the project management office. We have three general service areas: network, application, and information security. Network services provides basic infrastructure, servers, desktops, office automation, disaster recovery, etc. This team also manages our central service desk for customer assistance and provides banking operation services to ensure financial transactions are processed in a timely and reliable manner. The application services team implements and manages both purchased and custom software. We develop applications where commercial options are not available or cost-effective. The team aids in the research, selection, and implementation of business software, including the integration of multiple third-party products or services where needed. The application services team is also responsible for many aspects of data management, such as database administration and file management. The information security team, or InfoSec, provides agency-wide technical and non-technical security services. These include a broad range of activities to ensure appropriate cybersecurity protections for Treasury networks, applications, and data, as well as robust due diligence of third-party providers and ongoing security awareness training and monitoring across the agency. There's a manager responsible for each service area. They all report to me. In a small shop such as ours, everyone wears multiple hats. Coverage is a priority. For example, the service desk and operations staff back each other up to ensure banking operations and service desk needs are covered at both our Salem and Tigard office locations. The information security and network services teams work very closely together and are able to leverage areas of shared expertise to provide operational coverage. In this environment, cross-training is obviously critical and ongoing. The pace of technological change means that training in general is a key focus for the Information Technology Division. Treasury has two major initiatives with significant impact on IT. Information security has always been a priority at Treasury, and it remains a primary strategic initiative in the coming biennium. We continue to devote significant resources and time to this vital program. Thanks to the additional resources approved by the legislature in 2014, we've been able to continue to grow our program as needed to address emerging threats. Cora will provide additional information about the Cash Management Improvement and Renewal Program in just a moment. The first strategic initiative we'll talk about today is our information security program. A dedicated information security program was established in 2014 with legislative approval of additional resources. These resources have helped to further align Treasury security protections with financial industry standards. This slide lists a few key activities since the program was established, as well as a few near-term planned activities. We expanded our security program by establishing a dedicated information security team. We hired a chief information security officer and an information security architect. We bolstered resources available for information security by organizing both InfoSec and network services teams to ensure strong integration and information exchange between the teams and to maintain continued strong focus on information security. This approach has helped promote a robust security culture throughout IT, not just with the InfoSec team. Among the benefits of this structure are higher levels of security across the technical environment, from servers to switches to desktops to applications, as well as more effective management of our cybersecurity software, tools, and services. Regular assessments have always been a founding principle of Treasury's security strategy, and you'll see several listed in the slide. In addition to ongoing internal assessments and audits, we frequently engage consultants with specialized industry expertise. These area-specific and general assessments are used to evaluate and guide our information security program and investments based on financial industry standards and to ensure we are effectively protecting against potential security threats. Looking forward, we have several key assessments scheduled over the next year, including a general IT controls audit conducted by Deloitte in March, as well as another incident response assessment, penetration testing, and NIST-based risk assessments. Sorry. Whoops.
There you go.
I'm right here. Information security threats and best practices are constantly changing. With the resources provided in 2014, as well as the approval of the request for 2017-19, we believe Treasury is well positioned to address these challenges. Key information security program activities planned for the upcoming biennium include risk assessments. As mentioned in the previous slide, we will conduct regular assessments to continue to aid in prioritization, guiding our program based on industry standards, continuously updating our policies and procedures, and completing due diligence assessments with our service providers. We will continue to focus on cybersecurity hygiene across the organization, including performing repeatable and documented security operations tasks, such as ensuring comprehensive patching coverage and vulnerability management as our network and applications change. We will conduct incident response readiness testing, as well as third-party penetration testing to evaluate the effectiveness of these practices. In March of 2017, just next month, Deloitte will conduct a general IT controls audit focused on logical access controls. The results will be used to enhance our identity and access management program to ensure we continue to address our needs as they evolve in the coming years. While perimeter security has always been a key strength of our strategy, we believe new and emerging threats warrant additional investments in advanced detection and prevention systems. In collaboration with Treasury's data steward, we plan to implement additional data protection mechanisms, including enhanced policies, procedures, and technology. As always, we continue to focus on employee awareness because all employees have a role in securing the information we are entrusted with. We will be working with HR to ensure specific security requirements are included in all employee position descriptions and in employee evaluations where appropriate. And now I'd like to turn the presentation back over to Cora to tell you more about the cash management program and initiatives.
All right, Madam Chair and members of the committee, with your approval, I'll move fairly quickly through some of the slides. You have them then as takeaways, and then just in the interest of time, you have the next group behind me as well. So certainly stop me if I'm moving too fast, but no, I'm doing some of that purposefully so that you can move to the next area as well. So the Cash Management Improvement and Renewal Program, what is it? It's a continuous renewal program focused essentially on addressing the need for evaluation and replacement of systems and processes on an ongoing basis instead of waiting for end of life and or failure and then reacting to that. So this is a long-term program that will spin out a number of projects over its continuous life cycle. The next two slides really talk very briefly about the services that it addresses. And again, it's primarily those banking services related activities supported within the agency. One more. There you go. So what are the systems that we're focusing on right now? This is a cleaned version of what we actually refer to within the agency as the ugly chart. But essentially, we have a mix of purchased and internally built systems. Many of them are 18 plus years now in service. They're very highly integrated, time-sensitive requirements, high security demands, and as you can imagine, there are a number of risks and challenges related to those. Not the least of which is the programming language with which some of those are written in, as well as just a number of the outdated and no longer supported infrastructure components that we're dealing with. And again, for those of you who were on the committee last year, you heard some of this.
I have heard from local governments their great frustration with one of the old systems that they rely on and need not only access to, but apparently they use it for instructions about maybe depositing or taking out money or seeing what the status of something is. Has that one been replaced in the last couple of years, or is that one of the legacy?
Chair Nathanson, we actually have a few slides directly related to that.
Okay,
and yes,
good.
It is one of our key projects.
Thank you.
So let me start with some context. Even though this is an IT-related committee, I want to give you a brief understanding of one of our major CMRP, and forgive me for the acronym, projects that is not an IT project. And I think as we move forward, you'll come to an understanding of why I wanted to give you that context. So that project really is a comprehensive reevaluation of our banking and cash management service delivery model and our related relationships. While we have 13 relationships with financial institutions for depository purposes, the primary banking activities that are supported by the agency are through one primary vendor. While that has served us well over the years from a cost perspective and an efficiency of process perspective, we've also come to realize that there are a number of embedded risks in that approach as well. including those individual institutions, make their own policy choices, make their own IT commitments, et cetera. And if we have one relationship, we're then beholden to that, the choices that that individual institution makes as well. So we've determined that it makes sense for us to deepen our relationship with another primary vendor. Our goal is to essentially diversify so that we have two major relationships in addition to then what would continue to be those 13 depository relationships. We're actually in an open competitive RFP process right now, underway in selecting that additional vendor. And again, that will make more sense why I brought that up as we move forward in the next few slides. So the three major projects that are IT related include our ACH business systems renewal project, our LGIP business systems renewal project, which Chair Nathanson mentioned, and then our core banking business project. The ACH business systems renewal project takes those components that support electronic transaction processes within the agency. So again, a large portion of those 230 billion transactions that we discussed, and really transform the approach to which we provide the services. Right now, they are primarily supported within the agency, meaning that all of the data and transactions come through the four walls of the agency, if you will. We've determined there are a number of reasons that that should no longer be the case. The business case was completed in August of 2014, and we came forward last session and requested funds for implementation activities related to this project. The fundamentals of the business case are unchanged. We continue to move forward with use of a transform approach, which is essentially moving this outside of the agency and relying on a vendor for delivery of the majority of the systems. What has changed is who we're going to move forward with to support those vendor activities. We had originally planned to move forward with our existing primary vendor. When we made the decision to think about adding an additional vendor to Treasury's infrastructure in general, we stopped and decided that these activities would be placed with that new vendor. We've taken a number of mitigation activities internally to make sure that we're comfortable waiting until we select that vendor to move forward, and Nancy's team and mine are working closely on those on an ongoing basis. But as you might imagine, stepping back and thinking about a new vendor approach to this solution means that the timelines that we came and talked to you about last biennium are no longer relevant. As soon as we make a selection for a new vendor, we will go through the project management implementation planning activities and come forward with a new project schedule for this project. That means we have really spent none of the funds that we requested during the last biennium from an implementation standpoint for this activity. The LGIP business systems renewal project, same fundamental rationale. Business case was completed in the same timeline, and really the same original vendor approach was selected initially. For slightly different reasons, we chose also to step back just after session, and in fact, some of this activity was going on towards the end of session. We were collaborating with our legislative fiscal office representatives at the time on the changes that we were expecting to make. Essentially, what we found was going with our existing banking provider for the services necessary here would have required a level of customization instead of what we originally believed was configuration that just didn't make sense from a cost perspective, from an ongoing maintenance and resiliency perspective, and a variety of other reasons. So we stepped back. Again, we took a number of mitigation activities so that we could feel comfortable supporting that sort of halt, did some additional due diligence, initially went out with a full-scale RFP and selected, in this case, a vendor. And we are in implementation planning stages right now and actually beginning some implementation activities related to replacement of this system. The difference also between this system, we're not just talking about replacing infrastructure. We are talking about improving it and bringing things to a full-scale online supported environment for our customers, whereas right now they're limited to just a phone, either live-person phone activity or VRS, a voice response system activity. Finally, our core banking systems renewal project. Those are the systems that sit at the center of our banking infrastructure, primarily for reporting of bank account balances and maintenance of those same transactional and balance information. We had intended to create a business case for replacement or refinement of those systems during the 2015-17 biennium. As you might imagine, with two full-scale RFP efforts, some additional mitigation activity, that was put on hold. We're going to start picking that up probably towards the end of this biennium, but that will now phase over into the 2017-19 biennium. Again, we've been working closely with our legislative fiscal office representatives to make sure that they're fully aware of the implications of moving some of these things into the next biennium. With that, we are available for any questions that you might have.
So... In your banking applications, your transactional applications that you do, those are probably all ACH-based transactions. Is that correct?
Many of them are ACH-based.
Through NACHA, yeah.
The activities that we support within the agency are primarily ACH-based. Okay. Of course, we have wire and some other electronic functionality as well. Those are already primarily supported via vendor relationships.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Nerman.
Thanks, Chair Riley. So I think this has been explained to me before, but I maybe didn't get it, so maybe I need to get it again. But why doesn't the Treasury do the credit card processing for every single agency? Why is it when the DMV comes to us and says, oh, we need some extra funding to spin up this credit card processing, why can't they just go get that as a service from the Treasury Department?
Representative Nierman, members of the committee, in fact, they do purchase off of a priceless-liked agreement that is through the Treasurer's Office. So the processes and the costs associated with what the department does is through the Treasurer's Office.
Can I follow? Do all agencies, when I say all, let's say like 95%, do all agencies do that then, or...?
Absolutely. The services provided through the state treasurer's office are really, for the most part, mandatory. In some cases, you have the ability to use an external third-party service provider, and those tend to be in cases where a functional program requirement, I like to use the example of state parks, their reservation system is a reservation system that, you know, there are versions of in state park organizations around the nation, and there are some payment functionalities that come along with it. But even those third-party vendor contracts and relationships are still closely aligned with our merchant card contract agreement with our primary vendor.
Good. Thank you.
Sarah Linthicum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the very last slide you came to, there was a sub-bullet that says software as a service, cost alternatives will be considered. I assume you've already put most of those through the filter and have a couple that are in the running or whatnot. And then the last part, custom components will be required. And do you have a tool, several slides back, it was probably all the way back in what you called your ugly model.
Sure. We'll
you referenced C-sharp and Power Builder and whatever else. And I'm wondering, you know, what integration is going to be part of this banking system renewal? What does that look like?
Senator Linthicum, I'll tackle the first part of that question, and then I'll let Nancy maybe tackle the second part of that question. So when we talk about the customization requirements that are being necessary, often we're asked, why don't you just use a demand deposit account system like a bank will use? And in fact, that is what we have right now at the core. But the customization around it is because, unlike a bank, we do have to coordinate with the Department of Administrative Services and with agencies with respect to a number of accounting and budgetary control related items. So there's that extra requirement as a state entity acting like a bank that really is something your bank really couldn't care less about. You know, you do your accounting on your own. If you've imposed some sort of budgetary process on your own, those are yours to deal with. We have to work very closely with our accounting and budgetary partners to make sure that the information they're sharing with us and we're sharing with them really works and informs the process from a language and
so your core system there is a DDA system.
Yes.
With
yes.
Customization.
Yes, Senator Riley, it is.
Okay.
In terms of the language, the languages?
Yeah, well, just what tools are you going to be using to, in this, you're going to want integration here as well, you know, as all the subparts of that banking. Right. And I'm curious what your strategy is.
In general, we haven't chosen the whole suite of tools, but for any any custom coding that is required, we will be using C#.NET. We certainly will not invest any more in Power Builder. We haven't done so for many, many years. So a big part of this is to get rid of the Power Builder and put anything that we have to develop custom-wise into, you know, the standard modern tool sets.
Senator DeVore.
Thank you, Chair. The cash from marijuana, is that something I would ask you about?
Senator DeBoer, members of the committee, yes. I'd suggest perhaps not at this hearing, but we're absolutely available to discuss that. We certainly work with our agencies with respect to collection of tax payments related to that activity, as well as typical, so retail tax payments that are specific to that activity, but as well as there's ongoing UI payments, withholding payments, corporate and personal income tax payments. You know, the depth and breadth of the impact from a financial perspective to the state is certainly beyond just that immediate retail tax payment. And yes, it's something that I have probably come to participate in on a broad level more than I ever thought that I would.
So,
and a follow-up.
Yes, go ahead.
What bank are you depositing it in?
So right now we have deposits that are going into both our primary relationships, that is U.S. Bank, and also one of our other 13 depository relationships, that's Wells Fargo. There are limits on how those funds are collected, so primarily through cash. They have to be deposited essentially commingled with other general funds that are coming into the state, and they cannot be branch deposited. They instead have to be cash vault deposited, so essentially they're packaged up, sent through an armored car service, and then brought to a cash vault. So some of those same restrictions that local banks are putting on to their customers are being placed on the state right now as well.
It will have great concern of the cash and opening up the federal banking system to keep up with the times now that a lot of the states are in the same predicament.
Absolutely. There's a lot of concern. There's a lot of effort and conversation within our office on a variety of related topics.
Senator, do you need a follow-up from her later?
No.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Chair Riley, members of the committee, next up and our last agenda item, we have a presentation from the Office of the State CIO. I believe it's going to be Darren Wellington, who serves as a strategic technology officer for the public safety program area. Darren's going to be talking about the information resource management plan in that program area. So please introduce yourself for the record when you're ready.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Darren Wellington, and I'm the public safety officer for the, strategic technology officer for the public safety policy group. Next to me is Jared Chalk. He's the strategic technology officer for the transportation and economic development group, who you saw last committee hearing, and he'll be doing the slides for me. Thank you for the opportunity to present the Information Resource Management Plan for Public Safety. Today it's my turn to provide an overview of the process of developing the IRM, the agencies involved, and some of the highlights from the plan. This will include information on IT governance, utilization of the Office of the State CIO services, IT security, goals and objectives, and an overview of the agency initiatives. The IRMs provide a strategic landscape for planning, executing, monitoring IT in support of agencies' business needs. I'd like to take a moment with this slide to acknowledge the contributions of some of the people in the public safety agencies who worked together in developing this plan. In addition to those listed here, the governor's focus area team and key members within the Office of the State CIO reviewed this plan and provided valuable feedback. There were a number of people, as the previous slide showed, working on this plan. But one of the things that we needed to do early on as a group was to discuss what our guiding principles would be. And in reviewing the statewide information resource management plan, the group found that many of the guiding principles contained in the statewide information resource management plan were a good fit for public safety. These guiding principles are a hybrid from the statewide plan and consensus within the group. I would like to note also that these guiding principles were also used as a measure to ensure that the goals and objectives that were developed later in the IRM were compatible with their guiding principles. Those are establishing a shared vision to guide decision making, providing a roadmap for multi-agency IRM approaches, engaging in shared learning, and enhanced communications. For the Office of the State CIO, public safety includes the Department of Corrections, the Criminal Justice Commission, the Department of Justice, Oregon Military Department and Office of Emergency Management, the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision, the State Police, the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, the Oregon Youth Authority, the Liquor Control Commission, the Government Ethics Commission, and the Racing Commission. This is a slight change from traditional budget alignment, as the Liquor Control Commission, Government Ethics Commission, and Racing Commission are typically addressed in other policy areas. But for our purposes, there was enough of a business alignment that we included them in public safety. I know that the committee's seen similar slides to governance in the last three presentations. I'd just like to add that at its simplest, governance is about who gets to make what decisions. And for our purposes, IT governance is a comprehensive set of processes that ensure effective and efficient use of IT in enabling the agencies to achieve their goals. Or in other words, doing the right things and doing them better, faster, and cheaper. This means that agencies need to have processes about how they make decisions, who makes the decisions, and at what levels the decisions are made, about the priority of the projects that they undertake. IT governance processes should result in prioritizing IT projects or initiatives and pursuing those IT initiatives that support the most important outcomes for the agencies. In order to be successful, IT governance is a business partnership with information technology, a joint conversation that defines how the agency will fulfill its mission and make progress in its strategy. In public safety, some agencies have documented strategic plans and governance models, and some do not. Consequently, some of the public safety agencies have more mature governance processes than others. The challenge moving forward will be making the shift from developing or refining individual agency governance models to a governance model that covers the cross-agency governance needed for public safety. This was ultimately one of the issues that became a goal for this policy group. The takeaway from this slide is similar from the other slides that deal with alignment. There's really a continuum of services that state agencies consume from the state data center. With the Department of Corrections on one side, where they're a full user of state data center services, and then maybe on the other side, the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision that uses very few of those services. For some agencies, such as the Oregon Youth Authority, there's a high level of interest in becoming a full data center customer, and the Oregon Youth Authority, I'm trying not to use acronyms, the Oregon Youth Authority has explored budget requests to facilitate the cost of transition for 1719. Generally, public safety agencies have been very open to using data center services on a project-by-project basis, and some of the new projects within public safety include new systems being developed that will be hosted at the state data center or use state data center resources for hosting. In some cases, there is enough of a program relationship that larger agencies assist smaller agencies with support for information technology systems. And an example of that would be that the Department of Corrections, who's a full data center user, hosts a data warehouse that the Board of Parole uses for statistical analysis and data analytics. Security. This is really kind of a past, present, and future slide. In July 2015, the Enterprise Security Office had found that there had been three data breaches. None of those data breaches happened or occurred with public safety agencies. Mm-hmm. Then in September of 2015, the Secretary of State conducted an information security audit that included 13 executive branch agencies. Four of those agencies were from the public safety policy area. You can see there the Department of Corrections, the Department of Justice, the State Police, and the Youth Authority. And then a year later, in September 2016, the governor issued Executive Order 1613 that directed executive branch agencies to consolidate their IT with the state CIO. And as part of that executive order now, there's a phase one of the project to assess risk and to perform scanning, external scanning, and the State Police, Youth Authority, and Department of Corrections are part of those phase one agencies, and that risk assessment and external scanning will be completed in the first quarter of this year. As with other policy groups, of course, public safety data is very sensitive. Many of the agencies have federal partners that require compliance with federal standards that may result in audits, certifications, or other actions. Given the nature of public safety interactions with federal standards and state standards, security is integral to all of their processes. As a foundational component, many of the goals and objectives contained within the public safety IRM presuppose a certain level of security to be successful in carrying out their missions. Security also has a foundational role to play in implementing the IRM goals that will be discussed in the next two slides. For example, improving data collection, cross-agency partnerships, and increased service delivery. There are five goals and objectives. I had to split it between slides because I tried to show for the strategic goals, what objectives the agencies were currently doing or proposing to work on that mapped to those goals. The five goals are developing IT strategic plans, increasing cross-agency partnerships, improving data collection, increasing IT infrastructure effectiveness, service delivery system availability to staff, stakeholders, and the public to meet their needs. In addition to providing the goals, I've also included the objectives, and then the final goals there are on that page. Earlier I talked about the guiding principles. If you look at these five goals with their objectives, they do help with establishing a shared vision, providing a roadmap, engaging in shared learning, and enhanced communications for this policy group. So we really tried to integrate what our guiding principles were with our objectives and our goals. This slide is a snapshot in time. It's just an overview of the projects that are in flight or have been planned for 1719. This list will change, but I just included it so that you would have a flavor of the types of projects that the public safety policy area is undertaking. This slide is just a tabular representation of the strategic goals and the agency initiatives that I had split out on those other two slides. Note that Goal 1 does not involve IT projects, but it's focused on IRM and strategic planning. It's just a different look at what was presented in the other slides. Conclusion. This IRM has greater focus on the current state of IT within the policy area. The next plan will provide more future state planning. This is the first time public safety agencies have conducted IRM planning. That's why the next one will have more future state in it. Out of that first time, we found that agencies are committed to working together through the biennium for more information resource management planning within the group. And we recognized as a group that there are a number of opportunities to identify shared services within our policy area. And I just wanted to note also that the current IT projects and the proposed IT projects, based on that tabular slide there, do align with the strategic goals. So what this policy group is doing now does align with how they intend to focus on future needs and future requirements for the policy area. And finally, here's our office contact information. If you have questions or comments after the hearing, please, I'm the one on the very bottom. So you can start with me if you wish.
Questions? Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Chair. When you do the 9/11 updates and stuff, are those shared with counties and cities? Is it a coordinated effort?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator DeBoer, I'm not sure 9/11 updates. Are you talking about
911 services?
Okay.
On phone?
I'm not sure of what updates you're talking about. I can work with the Office of Emergency Management.
I was just curious. That's fine.
So,
may I provide clarification in strategic goal 4 and 5? You've got free relay and Ethernet to text 911, OMD and OEM, and I think that spawned the question.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, Senator Linthicum.
And I'm doing mind reading.
Yes, the Oregon Military Department has an Office of Emergency Management, which is part of its organization. And that organization is responsible for the 911 program, the phone program. And they had essentially a frame relay network that all 911 was based off of, and they've currently upgraded that to an Ethernet network, a digital network that can carry internet protocols and all kinds of different protocols along that data network, rather than frame relay and what could be analog at times.
So
that's the project, and that's the update, and I believe that project has been concluded.
But I think possibly staff can help with that.
Senator Riley, members of the committee, Senator DeBoer. Yes, the Mr. Wellington's absolutely correct. The Oregon Office of Emergency Management led this project in coordination with the Office of the State CIO. That project has successfully been concluded. It did involve converting the connectivity, the type of connectivity, to all 43 public safety answering points across the counties. So very much a partnership with the public safety answering points at the local government level. All of their connectivity has now been converted, and they are also involved certainly in certain regions with the Text to 911 program as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McSpaden. I guess I wasn't quite getting the essence of the question.
Right. Other questions? If not, that thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes our informational meeting. So I'll close that, and I will close this meeting of the committee. Thank you very much. Okay.